There's still a lot of questions that the Indians need to have answers from. To help us out with some of those, we go out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We are joined by RJ Anderson of CBS Sports. RJ, thanks for taking a couple minutes.
Thanks for having me on.
So how do the Indians bridge the gap between the other top three teams in the American League then? From an outside perspective looking in, what is more valuable in your opinion? Is that selling the farm for Manny Machado? Is that going after long-term relief pitching, someone like a Brad Hand or Iglesias? Or is that trying to get an outfielder, even though that market doesn't necessarily have the best of pieces materializing?
Yeah, I guess the answer is you can try to do a little bit of both. Or all three, I suppose, in this case, to try to bridge the gap. And what I mean by that is you can certainly pursue Machado. You can go out and maybe take on some of these lesser-known relievers who have multiple years of control left. For instance, some guys in San Diego and Miami who people might not be as familiar with, or guys like Drew Steckenrider and Kirby Yates and even Craig Stammen. And, you know, those aren't eighth, ninth-inning guys necessarily, but Cleveland has the foundation there with Cody Allen and Andrew Miller, where realistically they can plug in a seventh inning guy and, you know, see their bullpen improve by leaps and bounds. You know, once you get to the postseason, they're also going to be able to cover for their middle relief because they have that rotation that can work deep into games. And then with regards to the outfield, certainly, as you mentioned, you know, there's not a ton out there. I do wonder if they'll actually try to use Francisco Mejia as, you know, a potential solution out there. I know they had given him some looks at third base in the outfield throughout the last year or so, and it would make sense if they believe in his ability to hit big league pitching right now to bring him up and slot him in. So I guess my answer is really try on each front and see, you know, what you can get and what shakes out. And if they do that, you know, I think we'll be talking about them as a team that is on the same level as these other monsters in the American League, even if the record doesn't necessarily reflect it at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up Mejia there because he just doesn't seem interested. And Terry had the quotes yesterday, playing right field isn't something that he necessarily wants to do. He believes he's a big league catcher, but the Indians don't necessarily see it that way with the block of Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez standing in his way. Just from a player perspective that way, RJ, what would you do if you're Francisco Mejia? Do you just take yourself out to the outfield and say, I'll do whatever's best for the team? Or do you hold out because long-term, being a catcher with the offensive skill set that he has is much more valuable to his pocketbook than anything else?
Yeah, and, you know, this is a dilemma. And obviously, from our perspective, we both would probably say, you know, do what's best for the team and, you know, go out to right field. And hopefully in a year's time or 6 months' time or whatever, you shift back behind the plate, and that's where you are for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years or what have you. But I get it from his point of view too. If you feel like you put in the work to be a catcher, you certainly, you know, don't want to get moved off that position before you have a chance to prove yourself at the game's highest level. Obviously, you know, if you're Terry Francona or the Indians management, you probably want to see the guy take on a little bit of a different attitude and, you know, kind of compare him here to Kyle Schwarber with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Schwarber wanted to prove all the doubters wrong that he could catch. And, you know, he got a chance to catch a little bit in the big leagues, but at the end of the day, the Cubs had Wilson Contreras, and, you know, even before Contreras, they had Miguel Montero and a few other types. And, you know, to Schwarber's credit, he's moved to the outfield. He's moved wherever they want him to. And, you know, baseball's full of players who they wanted to play a certain position. They had to move elsewhere for the betterment of the team. And, you know, they took it in stride. And, you know, I get it from his perspective, but if I were him, you know, just my personality is, you know, non-confrontational and, you know, try to make the team as good as possible. And I guess I would slide to the outfield. But again, I get it from his point of view, and I hope we don't make him into a villain because of his preference.
Staying with the stars, we know between Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor, if you can add a Manny Machado or maybe get a Mike Moustakas, and Moustakas is where I think this becomes more of an interesting conversation because Machado is going to have a lot of suitors, and then it becomes an easy answer whether or not you shuffle the deck in positionally. Is Mike Moustakas, though, would he be worth moving Kipnis to the outfield, putting J-Ram at second, and then having Moustakas at third? Like, is there enough value there with what his bat can give to actually change up the structure of what you currently have defensively?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, if you looked at Moustakas' production, his OPS plus was basically equal to what he did last year. Now, he's not going to post, you know, 40 home runs again, but he's a good hitter, and he's probably better than the offseason treated him. I think everybody was sort of convinced that, oh, he's not going to repeat last year. Therefore, you know, he's not worth a multi-year commitment or, you know, a big money deal. And I thought that was a little unfair to him because, you know, we're just at a point in baseball where it seems like if the guy's not elite, nobody wants to pay him money. And that's just not how the game should work. And it also, it just isn't good for the game. And, you know, Moustakas, you know, he has his flaws as a player, but he's a legitimate above average hitter, and if you slot him into that Indians infield and do the alignment you just talked about with Jose Ramirez playing second base, and you still have Francisco Lindor as shortstop, and then you have Yonder Alonso at first, you know, if you factor in Yan Gomes behind the plate, you have arguably the best infield in baseball. I know, you know, you can argue for the Astros, you can argue for a few other teams, but that's a really good infield. And, you know, hopefully the move to the outfield could get Jason Kipnis hitting again. And if so, yeah, you've strengthened your team in a variety of ways, and you certainly made, you know, the team more versatile and deeper in that regard, because injuries happen, and you don't want to see Lindor or Ramirez or any of these guys get hurt. But it's certainly, you know, something you need to take into consideration, because unfortunately, you know, that kind of stuff happens. So I think, you know, if they come up short in Machado, that yeah, Moustakas would make sense. You could even talk about a guy like Adrian Beltre. You know, fairly go out and get Adrian Beltre. You'd probably have, what, the funnest infield in baseball with Beltre, Lindor, and Ramirez. So I think they should be open to basically any infield consideration because of their versatility and because, you know, they have a chance to have the best infield in baseball if they go out there and make a splash here at the deadline.
Joined by CBS Sports' RJ Anderson here on 92.3 The Fan. You know what's fascinating to me is just the idea that as we approach the All-Star Game and the Midsummer Classic, Trevor Bauer could legitimately be a starter in that game. I think it'll go to Severino, but the turnaround that he's had from one season to the next, working on the slider, working on the changeup, two pitches that are drastically different this year, and he's starting to see the dividends. How much of this is sustainable for Trevor Bauer because we are seeing tangibly where he's changed and altered his game?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I guess I'm inclined to think that it's more sustainable than not, because this is a guy who basically since he's been drafted has always had good stuff. And, you know, you know that he's an intelligent pitcher. You know that he really, you know, takes his craft seriously with the slow motion camera work and, you know, the thoughts he has on pitch design and all this stuff. I mean, you know, he seemed like the full package. And for, you know, basically what the first 6 or so years of his career, it seemed like he was underperforming to an extent because even though he would strike guys out, he was a little inefficient. And, you know, maybe he didn't have the results that we expected him to. This year, like you said, you know, he could conceivably start the All-Star game. And, you know, he's really improved across the board. He's improved some of those secondary pitches. And I guess I'm inclined to, you know, believe that the talent's there, the work ethic's there, you know, the intelligence is there. And it's just a matter of, you know, settling in. I don't know if he's going to be quite this good heading forward, but I am leaning towards saying that, yes, he's going to be better heading forward than he has been in the past. And, again, he was fine in the past. He just wasn't necessarily what you would expect when you combine that kind of talent, that kind of work ethic, and that kind of thoughtfulness about his craft. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we look back and this is sort of Bauer's breakout year.
More on the All-Star game. Jose Ramirez says he wants to play in the Home Run Derby. There's a lot about Jose that I love. I think a lot of people here in Cleveland love, but I get just branding-wise. Like, nationally, RJ, I know because you cover the game and you watch a million more games than a lot of fans do, you know Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor are probably the best 1-2 punch in baseball. Like, you get this, you understand this. But Jose doing the Home Run Derby just to build up his brand, is that worth it more than anything else? Or, like, is the offset cost here of what you saw happen to Aaron Judge last year, where for the next month it seemed as if he couldn't hit a ball out of the park? Like, is that worth it if you're an Indians fan to watch and see J-Ram on the nation's biggest stage?
Yeah, I think it's worth it because, you know, there's been studies in the past, and what I've read of them at least, there's really no correlation between participating in the Home Run Derby and having, you know, a rough second half or having a bad second half. And a lot of times, you know, the guys who have the good first halves are the ones who are invited to the All-Star game. And in the cases where they usually have bad second halves, it's more of a regression aspect. And obviously, you know, Judge did have a rough second half last year, but, you know, whether you tie that to the Home Run Derby or, you know, just a matter of, you know, I don't want to say the randomness, but, you know, baseball is pretty random. And sometimes guys go through slumps and there's really no connection to it. And we just make a connection because that's the way the human mind works. But, you know, with Ramirez's case, I think it'd be fun to see him in the Home Run Derby. He's not only one of the best players in baseball, but he's probably got, like, the most team-friendly contract in baseball, or at least one of the most team-friendly contracts in baseball. And he's just a joy, you know, to observe. His personality is wonderful. And, frankly, I think baseball needs to do a better job of showcasing guys like Ramirez and guys like Lindor, these guys who are just, you know, phenomenal talents, phenomenal players, and also just they seem to love the game. They seem to love life. And I think that's the, you know, the perfect blueprint, so to speak, for who baseball should be marketing heading forward.
RJ, you do a lot of work with draft stuff, and I know with the deadline approaching, you'll be as busy as anybody. But you know, with the All-Star game in Washington this year, I can't take away the idea, and I think I first saw it on your guys' site, CBS Sports, the idea that Bryce Harper could potentially be traded at the deadline if the Nationals continue to go down the slope that they're currently going down, and there is more separation in the NL East, and there is more separation from the second NL wild card. If Scott Boras rings up the phone and tells GM Mike Rizzo, listen, we're not going to sign Bryce after this season, do you see a scenario, big long shot, but do you see a scenario where Bryce Harper actually gets dealt at the deadline?
I guess I could see a scenario, but like you said, it's really not likely. The Nationals, to their credit, are only five games back in the division now. And I think when you look on them, when you look on paper and you compare them to the, you know, the Braves and the Phillies, you have to still feel like they have a shot here. And granted, you know, we've been waiting all year for them to hit the afterburners and, you know, take this division by storm like they were expected to. But I would have to believe that if they were going to, you know, if they have a rough rest of the month and you see them, you know, continue the slide that began in June, then maybe Mike Rizzo would consider trading Harper and, you know, look forward to 2019 by leaning fully on Juan Soto and, you know, creating an opening for Victor Robles, who was actually their top outfield prospect entering the season, even if he's been hurt. And I don't know. I don't think it's likely. I think that team is, I think the team probably has the best baseball of the season ahead of them. And I think they're probably still going to make the postseason. And it's possible that I'm just, you know, being a fool here, but I think it's very unlikely that they're going to fall out of it and that they'll deal Harper before July 31st. But it does make for some pretty fun, you know, what-if scenarios and roster baiting or whatever you want to call it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's probably not going to happen. It would solve a ton of Indian needs if it did happen. So there's a lot of wishful thinking there. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, it probably isn't going to happen. But a kid can dream that eventually they go down some sort of slide where you see Bryce Harper in the mix. RJ Anderson writes for CBS Sports. First time I've got to talk to you. I really enjoyed this. We'll have to get you on as the deadline approaches and the Indians start to do some more actions and some more wheeling and dealing as we hope they don't give up way too much for Mejia. I appreciate the time, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.